Hello, welcome to planningtogrow.com. This is Jeff McManus, and it's been an exciting time today. I've got a great guest here with us from the campus of Louisiana State University. For us in the SEC, we know them as the LSU Tigers. So we've got Fred Fellner on the phone with us. He's the Assistant Director in Facility Services. Fred oversees the landscaping there at the beautiful campus of LSU. And does a lot with hardscaping as well. Fred, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jeff.
A little bit about Fred. He has gone to school at Southeast Louisiana and has his master's in urban forestry and is currently a PhD candidate in urban forestry as well. Fred, you've been in this facilities business, in the commercial business for what, 22, you said 22 years?
Yes, sir, uh-huh.
And how long have you been there at LSU?
I'd be 15 years this December.
Well, you guys have some of the prettiest live oak trees I think I've ever seen anywhere. Tell us, I know people know your campus by your live oaks. Tell us a little bit about the live oak program that you guys have on campus.
Well, the live oaks are the signature of the campus, so when you come, that's what you notice. And many of the people who come to work here and live here mention that even years later when they're asked why they came to LSU. There's probably 5,000 mature trees on the campus. About 1,100 of them are the live oaks that we're talking about. And these are mature trees that have been planted sometime between 1935 and 1950 and, of course, continue right up until this day as we continue to plant more. And they populate pretty much the entire campus and create that atmosphere that you see. We have a relatively small crew that is working full-time taking care of these trees. We, of course, have the appropriate, you know, equipment for them to get up into the trees, and we do some climbing. As far as cultural treatment, Jeff, primarily we do mulching, and then we look for defects in them, the large trees, so that they don't co-dominant leaders and things of that nature. Our main problem with them are lightning strikes, which surprises many people, and so we do our best to install lightning protection on as many trees as we can every year to prevent that. We do a lot of mulching with hardwood, and we do have a funding source through the Live Oak Endowment. We do have a website that we're up and running, liveoaks.lsu.edu, that you can go to and learn about the trees and see pictures of them. And it does have a link to the endowment site also. So that's what we've got going.
Fred, tell us a little bit about lightning protection. What I know that there's homeowners that will ask me that from time to time. Is it worth doing? And about how much are you finding it costing down there in your area to put a preventative system or a lightning strike system in a tree?
Well, on a large tree that has significant real estate value, you know, and we're talking something that's 20-inch, above 20-inch DBH, we have some trees down here that are approaching 50-inch. You're going to spend $1,000 in order to do it properly, but that's just what needs to be done, and it definitely works. I have lightning traces. Matter of fact, on the website you can see. You can go to the parade ground, and we have three or four trees just on the parade ground where you can see those strikes that went all the way to the ground, and that is the main danger, because over time. The decay will set in, weaken structure, and you'll lose a large leader. And you really don't want to run that risk on a large tree. If you lose a leader, many times you can lose a third, a fourth of the tree, maybe even half the tree.
That's right. Well, you mentioned DBH. Tell folks that may not know what DBH means.
Oh, that's just a terminology for a diameter at breast height.
Okay.
So that we all, as we walk up to the tree, measure it at about where our breast would come.
That's right. Fred, I know you guys have that endowment set up down there, and that's folks giving money from just to keep the trees going so that you can maintain them and keep going year after year just to maintain the live oaks. Is that right?
Yes, that's exactly right. When someone endows a tree, and some of them, I mean, let's say that a tree is endowed for $5,000, $2,500 will go into a spendable account that I can use immediately, and then the rest goes into the long-term endowment, of which we receive proceeds from. And then they get a plaque on the tree, and many of these plaques will memorialize loved ones, family members, LSU alumni, you know, and they'll have little sayings on them that are touching and insightful, and so it's been a program that's been very well received.
Well, Fred, I know that we could spend the rest of the program on talking about the trees, but I did want to talk to you. You know, one of the things you cover that I'm not as familiar with, that I don't deal a lot with at the Ole Miss campus, and that's concrete and how that affects our home and what we can do. And I'd like to know, I know you guys pour a lot of concrete on campus, sidewalks and hardscapes a little bit. Tell a little bit, just give us a brief description on what you do with your hardscapes there. Is that does fall into your area, right?
It does, and I have a very quality crew of men who do concrete work for me. It's seven men, and we are replacing, of course, trip hazards and broken sidewalks and things of this nature, which are very straightforward. But we're also dealing with the root structures, mainly from the live oak trees, and you know, creatively working around obstacles. And so we've moved into pavers, porous pavers, and some other techniques. We've even begun to lay concrete over the top of closed cell insulation board to reduce the friction of the roots on the bottom of the sidewalks. We've gone to thinner walks in some areas where we can get away with it, identifying maybe an area where we want to walk through a grove, and if it falls apart after a certain number of years, that's okay. We'll take it up and do it again. We're doing, I really can't give you any numbers, Jeff, but we do a lot of that, a lot of curb and gutter, and we also do regular street repair, where we'll pull out and go full depth replacement, patching and replacement.
You mentioned something interesting, sidewalks and big trees. They generally, concrete and big trees, tree roots don't go well right together. You're urban forestry guy. You
right.
Also have a lot of experience in concrete. I mean, you're the perfect guy to put this together. Tell us some of the things that you're doing to ensure the tree roots, you're working around those, and how are you doing that? This is really interesting to me.
I sit on a design review committee, so every project that comes through, a group of landscape architects, myself, and a few other people are sitting looking at these plans. So we make notes and changes, we can reroute, we can specify the types of materials that we want to have used, and you know, there'll be a variety of different solutions to problems. We try and get, of course, hardscape as far away from the trees as we can, but the very nature of the fact, urban forestry, we're growing our trees now. We've got these huge trees in these limited spaces, and we want to preserve them as best we can. So we will introduce perhaps irrigation systems. We'll have an aerated bed, maybe of pea gravel, under the sidewalk. We'll pay very, very close attention to drainage patterns. We will even cut away streets. We have gone out into the streets as much as 6 to 8 feet, taking streets away from the automobile and give it back to the tree. There's no one single thing that we'll do, but there are a variety of things that we can do. One of the things I think that's applicable to a homeowner is the idea of going with a porous paver of some sides, and when they set together, they'll keep them apart, maybe even up to a half of an inch, 3/8 to a half of an inch. That can be filled with sand and pea gravel, and that allows the aeration and moisture to get down to the root structures beneath, not going with a pervious, a bedding underneath those, going with more of a pea gravel or just a sand bedding so that you have that percolation, that aeration. I think as an axiom, you could say that the roots are going to go wherever the water and the air is. Mm. So even if it's under a hard surface, roots will still go there if they've got water and air. And so it's up to us to figure out how to get the water and air through the hard surfaces.
Fred, do you ever build any sidewalks, raise any sidewalks, or build bridges over roots systems?
Yes. Yes. We have a very good and current example of that. In the LSU Memorial Oak Grove, which is on the south side of the Union, we just finished a construction project, and the fence is coming down in the next couple of weeks. And we worked closely with the architect to bridge primary root structures on one particular tree down there. We actually, specified where they could put their caissons down, how we could bridge over the area, and then how much backfilling and mulching we could do to not to impact those trees. So that, we've done that bridging. And the idea that you can put down also the insulation board, that's something that, a homeowner can do also. If they're taking out a sidewalk that's in the front of their home that's been uplifted by roots, when you go back in with sand and some insulation board, like a closed-cell dowel board that doesn't saturate. And it'll allow that root to grow up and push and not impact that sidewalk, at least for several years.
Right.
Maybe buy them a few years.
Right. I've never heard of that, Fred. That's an interesting technique. So have you guys used that on campus as well?
Yes, we have, and we have good examples of that. And also, a homeowner would want to, in a situation like that, make sure that the slabs are pinned together. I mean, that's something that we don't think about when we're getting ready, but as we're forming up, the easiest thing we can do when we're forming up is make sure that we've got the proper depth, the proper width, the proper base, and then where we're connecting over construction joints, expansion joints, make sure that there are dowel rods or pins between the adjacent slabs, so that when the movement does begin, because it will. It always does. Even if there's not a tree there, the concrete's going to move. Then you won't get the differential settlement. It'll all go up or come down together. So that's what we would consider a no-brainer. But
right. For most folks, that's maybe using rebar that's tied together or using some of that mesh wiring. I'm not sure what they call that. Is that something that y'all?
Yeah, welded wire fabric.
Wire
is
fabric.
What that's called. WWF, they call that in the industry, and that's a 10 gauge. Typically, homeowners may be a little lighter gauge, maybe 12. Yes, that's what should go into the concrete. It can be the rebar, which is the formed bar that has the tabs on it. The best thing to use at the joints would be a smooth bar, either a 3/8, half inch, or 5/8 inch smooth bar. That is set perpendicular to the joint, parallel to the surface, and just two or three on a typical sidewalk joint will hold it together nicely.
Fred, if I were to have a contractor coming on my property that's going to be pouring concrete near some of my trees in my yard, some of my large oaks, maples, what would be some of the things that I would want to ask him and make sure that he's sensitive to the root structure and things, or what are some of the tips that or guidelines that I may want to have before any work shows up or anything is done?
That's a good question, Jeff. I can tell you that the very nature, the contractor comes in wants to get paid, and of course he wants to do it according to his specifications. But contractors usually will park their equipment under the trees in the shade. They will drive on the root structures. They do not have the same mindset that we have as owners, as landowners, and stewards of the land. A typical large tree like a live oak, you can assume you're going to have most of the root structure out to the drip line of that tree. Well, if you've got a tree that's say 24 inches or 36 inches around, that tree is going to have a diameter of a canopy that may be as much as 50 or 60 feet. So one of the best things that a homeowner can do, whether it's a live oak or a red oak or a cat, doesn't matter what it is to make sure that the area is protected from construction activities. And he should tell the contractor right off, let's set up a little fence, let's set up a construction barrier tape around this area and stay out of it. And then you know, keep the equipment on from compacting the soil underneath the tree. That's the number one thing I think that I see that happens. And I see it every day. I drive down the street and I see that. If you can do that, then the contractor will become aware of your level of concern, and things will be easier as you work through.
Fred, I remember several years back we were down visiting your campus, and I was riding around with one of your staff members, and we made a stop not 10 minutes into our ride around campus, and just to pull over to get somebody to get off the tree roots. Somebody had parked on the tree roots. That's something that you have a passion for, and that's something your staff, I noticed, had a passion for as well. That's important, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very important, and it must have been a unique experience, but I'll drive through the campus, and when I see anybody on the grounds, we immediately get on the radio system, dispatch the superintendent to the area, meet with the individual, find out what's going on, move them off, and we want to help people. We want to say, look, you've got other options. So we think that the compaction issue is just the main problem. And so we use a lot of mulch. As far as homeowners, the cheapest thing, and I've done this myself, Jeff, I called up one of the guys that I know in town who does a lot of tree work, and I said, look, drop me off a load of chips when you're in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And most of these people that are working on trees will do it at free of charge. They're just looking for a place to offload. And you just have them dump it right there in your driveway, and the weekend comes around, you get your wheelbarrow out, take your time, and start spreading it around your trees and your ornamentals, and of course I use it for everything.
Mm-hmm.
But on a large tree, the research has shown that 4 inches is an optimal depth. If you can put 4 inches of, it doesn't matter if it's fresh, partially composted hardwood mulch, or even a mixture of the pine and the hardwood, whatever's coming off of a line crew from your local utility company, or like I say, a local arborist or tree company in town, and you spread that out and get as much out close to the canopy of the tree as you can. And that may be, a large live oak may take 20 or 30 cubic yards wood grindings or wood chips.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a real low cost, cultural treatment that anybody can do.
What are you finding on average, Fred, I guess a square foot cost going back to concrete? Let's go back and talk a little bit about what you like to see in a slab or a sidewalk, I'm sorry. Give me some dimensions that you like to see, just a brief thumbnail dimensions, 4 inches thick, about how wide you're shooting your typical sidewalk. And then what kind of concrete do you like to see in there?
Well, as far as, a homeowner, they're going to be pretty standard with whatever's in the subdivision typically, or, and if it's a removal and replacement, they can figure that it's going to be $6, $7, $8 a square foot.
That's good.
And we build our sidewalks like a street. Well, we know they're going to be driven on sooner or later.
Right.
Perhaps even by our own people. So so we'll go a little bit higher here. We may go 4,000 or higher PSI. That is the strength of the concrete after it has cured for 30 days. A homeowner will go with, 3,500 or maybe 3,000 PSI concrete. The lower amount, that's the number of bags per cubic yard, 3, 4, 5 bags, 6 bags per cubic yard of cement, Portland cement that goes into the concrete mix. The more cement, the more costly, but the harder it is after that 30-day cure cycle. It is important that that the concrete be allowed to cure and set up properly before it's driven on. We here at the campus, and unless we're going with a real high cure, fast cure, which we can do, we always want to give it 3 or 4 days before we put any traffic on it. It'll obtain about 70 or 80% of its strength in within a week. In a homeowner in thickness, typically you're going to use a 2x4 or a 1x4, which will be that 3.5 inches deep, and then dig out a little bit. Organic material needs to be removed. You need to get down to a clay, undisturbed, base material. You don't have to use any sand or stone or anything to do a sidewalk, but you should get down to some soil that's pretty firm and undisturbed.
Now, if we were going to go beside some existing tree roots, would we come back with our sand or possibly some pea gravel to give us that cushion you were talking about earlier?
Yes, you would. That is exactly right.
Okay.
You would try and get the sidewalk, set the forms up as high as you can to allow that tree, and then, like you're saying, just put some regular pea gravel down, or pea gravel sand mix is really a good thing, and then pour your sidewalk over the top of that.
Okay. Well, Fred, I know we're running close to the end of our time, but I did want to ask you one question that's been on my mind a lot. You guys obviously have a football program down there at LSU, and you have to deal with large crowds that come onto campus, and obviously you have your beautiful live oaks. Tell me how you manage a tremendous influx of crowd there on that campus and in the live oaks. How does that work, and how do you manage that?
Out of the interface. Well, we manage it with a lot of diligence and a lot of hard work by on the part of a lot of people, Jeff. And I've got some very good people. We several years ago, one of our chancellors who was very, very far thinking, established a fund in $1. Per ticket, per football ticket, goes into a fund that produces about $500,000 worth of resource a year that is then spent on landscape projects of some kind. These can be hardscape, they can be the porous systems we talked about, they can be bollards, rails. So we've incorporated a lot of hardscape and softscape changes into the landscape to keep people off of the trees, especially in the center of campus. And we do a lot of temporary setup of fencing and ropes and stakes and signs. So it's a big effort, but it does pay off. And the athletic department, for their part, has really expanded parking. We've probably got more parking here, than any place I've ever been to in terms of within sight of Tiger Stadium. And I don't have the figures right at my fingertips, but that has taken a lot of pressure off the campus too. They've developed a lot of grass parking areas where there used to be some pasture land.
Oh, that's nice.
And that has helped a lot.
I bet that
has. Once again, I go back to the mulch, that even if you do have vehicles up onto the grounds. If we've got mulch layers under the trees, there'll be much less damage, much less compaction to the soil.
How about shuttles? Do they use a shuttle service or bus service to bring people in? Transit system, is that in operation, do you know?
Yeah, well, there has always been some shuttle and some bus, buses that are running from downtown where we've got the parking garages, and I assume that'll be the case this year also.
Well, Fred, I appreciate you staying late tonight, and I know you're working late in the office and talking with us. It's way past quitting time for you, and we really do appreciate you joining us here on planningtogrow.com. Is there any last comments you'd like to make before we hang up here?
Jeff, it's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure knowing you and working with you and doing our benchmarking together. I think as far as the homeowner is concerned, the last comment I would make would be that to protect what you've got and don't be afraid of changing it. Many people will be too focused in on one plant, one tree, and maybe it's not a specimen tree. They should get someone to look at it and decide whether or not, we take down a lot of trees on campus. People see me taking trees down and say, well, that one was about to fall, and this one had some disease, and this one had bad structure to it. But then we turn right around and we say, look, for every tree we've taken down, we plant five more. So the homeowner can look at it from the same perspective. As far as being what I enjoy most about my job is being able to go out and just see year after year the new growth and the strengthening of that green infrastructure. And I think as homeowners, we want to do the same thing. We want to just see it changing and growing, and that gives us great joy.
Well, you and I are both enjoying the benefits of what future generations did for us in planting the trees on our campuses and our communities. And so we want to keep, I know you have a passion and I do too, is to keep planting trees and to keep promoting that. It's not only good, of course, it's the sort of the buzz for good for the environment, but it's just aesthetically pleasing, and it's always made good sense. So your campus is a real testimony to the love of the trees, and I would encourage folks to go down to the LSU campus. It's a little easier to get around if you don't go on a football game weekend, but to just go by and admire the trees there at LSU.
Hey, Jeff, one more thing. Now you got to come down and see me. We have a new facility.
Oh, that's great. That is great.
I need to take you on a nickel tour. I'll send you a few pictures.
That'll be great. I look forward to that.
Okay.
Well, Fred, thank you again for joining us today.